Welcome back to PuckCast with Statsman and AJ, RotoWire's Fantasy Hockey Show. Folks, I'm Paul Bruno coming to you from just north of Toronto, Ontario, in a town called Richmond Hill, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host, as always, is AJ Schultz, a great follow in another hockey mad area in the United States, specifically Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. That's very close to RotoWire headquarters over in Madison, where things must be buzzing these days, AJ, with the NHL winding down, the NBA winding down, the playoffs about to start, MLB season is underway. You got to be busy as heck, but the focus is on hockey. We only have 3 days left on the schedule and lots of stuff undecided. We may even have two shows this week. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but for now, I want you to help me look at the playoff races in each division, and we'll start with the Atlantic, my friend. And what do you see there that's undecided?
Well, in terms of undecided, there's still a lot going on. We do know that the Rangers are the number one overall seed. Boston can't catch them, so the Rangers will get whoever is the second wild card spot in the Atlantic. That division title is still up for grabs. Could be Florida, could be Boston. Toronto is firmly cemented in the three seed, so they're just waiting to find out who they're going to play. Same thing in the Metro. We know that matchup. It'll for sure be Carolina against the Islanders. Both have secured their spots there. So we have one matchup decided. When it comes to the wild card, it is still completely up in the air. The Lightning have the first wild card spot. They will face the winner of the Atlantic, whether that be Florida or Boston.
And AJ, that'll be decided tonight. Both Bruins and the Panthers have home games. The Bruins host Ottawa. The Panthers host the Leafs. The bottom line is this. Florida has the advantage in terms of regulation and overtime wins over Boston. So if they finish it at points tie, the tie goes to the Panthers. So the Bruins have a one-point lead. If they win, it's all decided. The Bruins get first place. If they win in overtime and Florida beats the Leafs in regulation, it's the Panthers that will go first, and the Leafs will get Boston in that first round. So that'll be decided tonight. And Boston's had a lot of trouble with Ottawa the last couple of years, so that's not an automatic W there. And the Panthers and the Leafs, there's no love lost between these two teams. And for weeks now, I've been thinking they're going to meet in the playoffs, but that plan could be upset with a couple of decisions going awry here. So that's why we're here today, to paint these pictures. And so bottom line, Florida could still finish first. They have to win in regulation, and the Bruins have to not win in regulation for that to happen. Any other combination, and it's pretty much the Bruins hosting first place. But now, let's get to the fun part, AJ, in terms of that wild card race. Four teams vying for the second wild card. I'm going to give you first crack at unraveling the possibilities here.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here. The simplest one is that if the Washington Capitals can beat the Flyers tonight, they are in. They hold the tiebreaker over Detroit, so it won't matter if Detroit wins tonight. Detroit is playing Montreal tonight. So Washington, if they beat the Flyers, they are in straight up. Detroit, if they win, they need the Capitals to lose in some fashion, whether it's losing overtime or losing in regular. There's some scenarios, obviously, where both teams lose in overtime. I won't dive into all of the machinations there. The Flyers have the longest shot. They need to win and have Washington and Detroit and Pittsburgh lose. And I believe all those losses have to be in regulation as well. So the Flyers have a really big uphill battle here. They also have to win in regulation. That part is key. The Flyers can't win in overtime because that would give a point to Washington. So interesting game tonight there. Then leaving it to last, my Penguins, if they win, they need Detroit and Washington to lose. They need Washington to win, to lose. There is a scenario where both teams lose in overtime. I think Pittsburgh still wins because they have more regulation wins.
Yep.
So they need a loss, wherever it happens in the game. They just can't have a win from either team. So tough one for Pittsburgh as well. They're waiting on them. But here's one scenario, Paul, before you give your opinion on how that all breaks down. Flyers are tied late in the third against Washington, a minute or two to go, game's tied 2-2. Flyers potentially got to pull the goalie there, right? In
absolutely.
A tie game, pulling the goalie because they have to win in regulation.
Yeah. Yeah.
You so could that'd be that. A fun thing to watch if you've got that game on tonight.
You can definitely see that as a possibility, AJ, and that's just going to show how topsy-turvy this thing can go. The interesting thing for me is at the beginning of the season, I talked to my friend who's a senior executive with the Detroit Red Wings, Jimmy Devolano, and he said he thinks the team's a ways away from making the postseason, but he's got to be pretty giddy with the possibility that Detroit does get a shot tonight if they beat Montreal, and they need a little bit of help with Washington losing against Philadelphia to get in. But your Penguins are not out of it by any means, AJ. Could Washington and Detroit lose a point? Certainly they could. And could the Penguins beat the Islanders? Of course they could. Islanders haven't got much to play with, but there's a rivalry factor there, and you can bet the Islanders are going to be motivated to dump their longtime rivals out of the playoffs by
beating. You know, I think they'd be better off, Paul, just resting everybody, getting ready for the postseason. Just no need to, you know, might as well call up like a third netminder from the minors. Let that guy play tonight. There's really, you don't want to have anybody get hurt in this game. It'd be a terrible thing for the Islanders. Rest everybody that they can.
I didn't know you could talk with your tongue so firmly in your cheek like that for that long, AJ. But you've got to be, like I said, you got to be going around to every church of every denomination in your area and lighting candles to spark the hopes of the Penguins, because they are rather slim, but they are real. And some of the tiebreakers, AJ, just to remind our listeners, regulation wins is the first tiebreaker, regulation and overtime wins. Then total wins, then most points earned in head-to-head competition. If teams have had an uneven number of meetings, the first game played in the city that has the extra game is excluded. And then finally, goal differential and total goals. So it could get pretty hairy here if things wind up tied. But we don't foresee that possibility based on the results that are likely to happen here as we've pointed them out. Suffice it to say, the easiest thing would be if Washington would win against Philadelphia, they would solve the issue and solve it conclusively. But all other teams have a shot if Washington does lose in that contest. AJ, that aside, now we have a couple other things to sort out, and we're not going to sort them out, but voters will. And I want to spend a little bit of time. First of all, let's go through the other divisions, AJ. We've talked about the Atlantic and the Metro, but in the Western Conference, let's solve the issues there too. In the Central Division, Dallas has clinched first place, but then Winnipeg and Colorado, they're duking it out for home ice, essentially, in the first round. They're separated by a point, Winnipeg with 106, Colorado with 105. Why don't you lead us through what each team has left on their schedule and the likelihood of what outcome you forecast?
Yeah, so Winnipeg does have the benefit of an extra game in hand. So that's crucial for them. They've got the Kraken today, and then they also have the Canucks on Thursday. So they're at home for both of those matchups, so that's helpful as well for them. So I would say Winnipeg probably has the inside track there. Colorado, meanwhile, going to need some help. They're going to need the Jets to lose a game along the way. They've got the Oilers on Thursday, so by no means an easy matchup. But it could be decided, obviously, if the Jets go in and win their game tonight. There's no way Colorado can catch them there. On the flip side, over in the Pacific, there's still a chance for Edmonton to catch Vancouver. Vancouver at 107, Edmonton at 104. Both those teams with two games remaining. I mentioned, you know, Vancouver has that game tonight. So they'll need a big win there in order to get that on the way. They've got the Flames tonight and then the Jets on Thursday. Meanwhile, Edmonton, they're,
Arizona and then Colorado the last two games. Yep. So they have to win out, and they hope to have Vancouver lose a game of the last two. So it's likely going to be Vancouver in first place. And AJ, when it comes down to the wild cards, you know which team wants to be the avoided club, avoiding a club in the wild card hunt, because Vegas is right now in the second wild card spot. They've clinched it; they can't go any higher. And Nashville clinches the first wild card date. Now, I'm thinking Vegas, now that they have all their guys healthy, nudge nudge, wink wink, They'll be heading into the playoffs, and nobody really wants to face them. But they'll go against the top team in the conference, which looks like it's definitely going to be Dallas. So that figures to be the first round matchup there. Compelling.
Well, there's one caveat there. The Golden Knights can still catch the Kings for third in the Pacific.
That's right.
And they've got a game in hand. So they could force their way into playing Edmonton, most likely, instead of having to play Dallas.
So there's a lot up in the air is what we're trying to tell you folks. So I don't want to see Edmonton and Los Angeles in the first round again. It seems like every year that's happening, AJ. So I would like something new. And wouldn't it be something to see Vegas and Edmonton duking it out? You'd expect, based on name recognition of those two clubs and then how deep they are, that you'd see them later in the playoffs. But we might get that tasty matchup right off the bat here. So that's
just smash the total. Over in every one of those games. The total is going to be over in every one of those games. Yeah. No way.
And then what about Winnipeg skunking Colorado a few days ago, 7-0 in Colorado, and those teams facing off in the first round? Do you think that there's going to be any leftover effects from that with Winnipeg and Avalanche? Without tipping your hand on the series outcome, do you think that game has any kind of a bearing on what we might see?
I think you're going to see a Colorado team that feels like they got embarrassed. I mean, rightfully so. That was a very poor matchup, and potentially that game could cost them home ice advantage, which, you know, is crucial here. So, yeah, I think motivated and upset that they lost home ice advantage because of that game.
And then Nashville, I kind of panned over them. They have had the most torrid winning streak of any club all season. I think they went 16 games undefeated, and I don't think any other team matched that record. So they're not going to be an easy out should they go up against Vancouver in that first round. Certainly Vancouver's coasted to the top of the division, and while they have a bit of a challenge remaining from Edmonton, they should be heavy favorites against Nashville. But I'm not discounting the Predators at all, because they have a great goalie. They have a very deep offense, they have a deep defense, and they're legit playoff participants. So from 1 to 16, if you were to rank all these clubs, I don't think there's a team that you can't make a case for at least winning the first round. And so that's the beauty of the NHL's first round of the playoffs. AJ, I maintain that the first round of the NHL playoffs, in fact, is the most exciting and unpredictable playoff in all of sports.
Seems fair to me. I got no argument there, Paul.
Well, let me see if you have an argument with a couple other topics that we want to touch on today. Of course, we have to discuss the latest in the saga of the Arizona Coyotes. It seems likely that they're destined to go to Salt Lake City next season in a late-breaking development where they have been courted by a very rich man who has very deep pockets in terms of the potential ownership of the new relocated franchise. And then they haven't shut the door on Arizona by the same token, but giving them a notice that if they can get their act together within 5 years, they'll be reconsidered for getting a franchise, maybe getting their own back. I'm not really sure how this is all going to play out, AJ. Can you unravel it for me a little bit?
Well, at the end of the day, I think the league just said, you know, screw it. Where, you know, they find this like land deal thing, but then the city of Scottsdale starts throwing a stink up about it and everything. And I think they were just like, I mean, I'll clean it up, but I think they just said, F it. I think they literally just were done with this. I think that's the only explanation for why this is going to happen so quick. Like, think about when Seattle came in, think about when Vegas came in. Like, we had months, years to lead in, to build fan engagement, to sell tickets. And instead, this time, they're just going, nah, we're out. I thought of this similar to the Baltimore Colts when they just left for Cleveland. I think it was Cleveland,
Indianapolis,
right?
Indianapolis.
Yeah, yep. And just, you know, middle of the night, just, oh, we're out, we're done. So we'll see.
Yeah, so it is up in the air, and still, it just shows you how much Bettman really wants to keep a team in Arizona. He's done everything that he possibly could, including the housing them in that university stadium capacity, about 5,000 fans. And the possibility of doing it again was on the table too. But I think they finally saw the tea leaves and said, we can't do this again, and we got to move. But they haven't closed the door on Arizona and Phoenix because they're still talking to that ownership and saying, you know what, you get your act together, get a rink together. We'll make sure you get a franchise back down the road. But Salt Lake City coming to the rescue here looks like the white knight on the horizon. And I'm not sure it's a hockey hotbed, AJ, but certainly the fellas behind that team have very deep pockets, and they're going to do it right. They have a stadium that's ready to be converted into hockey usage as well right away, so they can make the switch. In fact, I know that they have preparing two sets of schedules, one based on a team in Arizona, one based on a team in Utah as we speak. So this is going to be a hot topic in the next couple of weeks, but I think it's going to get solved, and there are going to be ramifications that affect both cities for a while yet. So a lot to unravel there.
Yeah, Paul, just two more things to add real quick. I had heard April 18th as a possible announced date. So potentially we're just 2 days away from them officially announcing that. And then the other thing I want to point out is this is not a necessarily traditional college arena. A lot of people probably think, oh, you know, decent capacity. You're talking 4,600. By comparison, the Wisconsin Badgers here in Madison play in front of 17,000 for hockey. In fact, the women's team has their own arena and play in front of, it's about 2,500. So you're putting an NHL team in an arena that's only slightly bigger than the women's hockey team here in Madison. So, I mean, that's a problem. You can't have an NHL team playing at that level. And, I mean, this is a women's team that's won more national titles than anybody else. They have their own arena. So the capacity there is a decent – they sell out all the time. I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying you can't have an arena for an NHL team that's comparable in size to a women's collegiate team.
Well, AJ, that's not the only topic that's a hot one right now. Most of the NHL awards are voted on by the press or the coaches or whatever. And there's one compelling race that I think stands above all the rest, and that's the MVP of the league, the Hart Trophy winner. I'm going to paint a scenario here, if you'll let me get on my soapbox, for the top four candidates as I see them, AJ. And I'm going to get you to judge the best candidate after I make my pick, of course. I'm going to give you a chance to make yours based on the numbers that I spit out. The numbers don't lie, and they make a very compelling case for one of the four. And I'll leave it at that as my preamble, and I'll get into it. The case for Nikita Kucherov. AJ, he, of course, leads the NHL in scoring, 43 goals, 99 assists, as we sit here on Tuesday morning. Plus 10, the plus minus, 30 even strength goals, 60 even strength assists, 34 block shots, 44 hits, 61 takeaways, 96 giveaways. Trying to give you all kinds of stats to make the case for these guys. He, of course, leads the league in points. He also has the biggest points lead over any teammate for any player in the NHL. So that's the case for Nikita Kucherov. The case for Nate MacKinnon, 81 games, 51 goals, 87 assists, plus 34, 41 even strength goals, 50 even strength assists, 69 block shots, 55 hits, 41 takeaways, 82 giveaways. This guy's never been an MVP before. All the other candidates have been. He also survived a very injured supporting cast, perhaps more limited than any other of the four candidates. So that's the case for Nate MacKinnon. Then the case for Austin Matthews, of course, leading the league in 69 goals, 38 assists, a plus 35, 51 even strength goals, 26 even strength assists, 91 block shots, 89 hits, 84 takeaways, 52 giveaways. He's the only one who's also going to get Selke Award votes among this quartet. And I'll note that among the stats that I quoted here, he leads all of the other guys in goals, the plus minus, blocked shots, takeaways, and giveaways. The case for Connor McDavid. We saw this case build to a crescendo, I think, at the All-Star break when he basically ran that event and won the skills competition almost across the board. On the regular season, he's become the fourth NHL player in history to top the 100 assist plateau. Of course, Kucherov could join him with one more point in his remaining games. In that category, he has 24 even strength goals. He has 63 even strength assists to lead all comers, 38 block shots, and among this quartet, leading with 116 hits, 68 takeaways in total, and 82 giveaways. Clearly the most individually skilled player among this quartet. So each of these guys has edges over the others. But for me, the case for Austin Matthews is the best one that I can see. He leads in many categories among this quartet. And as I said, the only one that can be considered an excellent defensive forward as well, and as an offensive player. So my vote is going to be for the guy whose sweater I'm wearing. It's the only Leaf sweater I have had in my life with a player's name on the back. And I think he's going to go down as the greatest of them all. But I'm curious to see, based on the case that I laid out, or maybe in spite of the case that I laid out, which of these four guys you like.
Well, I'm going to trust the experts, Paul, and I'm going to look at the odds makers and across the board, whether you look at FanDuel, BetMGM, BetRivers, Nathan MacKinnon is about minus 300 to minus 350 to win the Hart Trophy. Argument over. Minus 350. There's not even value in taking him to win the Hart Trophy. So, look, that's not the be-all, end-all, but you are not going to convince me to get off the Nathan MacKinnon train that I've been on for the last 8 years of this podcast, 9 years, whatever year we're in here, Paul.
Yeah.
Nathan MacKinnon deserves to win a Hart Trophy. He is consistently the best player on that team. I would argue comparatively to, especially McDavid and Matthews, maybe not as much Kucherov, but he's got the, least supporting cast compared to the rest of those guys. I think he, it's time. It's time for him to get it. I will bring up one interesting discussion point sending back to you about a different trophy here, Paul, the Vezina Trophy. If you look at odds all season, Connor Hellebuyck has been just same, like minus ridiculous numbers. In fact, the only odds I could find right now were Bet Rivers. He's like minus 3,000 to win the Vezina. But if you look at the NHL stats, like Bobrovsky and Hellebuyck have the same number of wins and about the same number of starts. One more game for Hellebuyck. The save percentage for Bobrovsky is about 0.07 behind. The goals against average is divided by 0.01. And actually, Bobrovsky has 6 shutouts to Hellebuck's 5. So I'm a little surprised that it's that big of a gap, according to the odds makers, and has been all season, when you consider that their numbers are really not that different. And you have the extra shutout for Bobrovsky. Not to mention, neither one of them leads the league in wins. That is Alexander Georgiev. Now, his save percentage is sub 9. His goals against average is over 3. He's not going to win that. But I am surprised that it's that skewed towards Hellebuyck when Bobrovsky's numbers are darn near identical.
And that just underscores the interesting nature of some of the award chases this season, AJ. I mean, heck, the Art Ross is up for grabs when the total points between McDavid, MacKinnon, and Kucherov. Not decided yet, though. Kucherov certainly has a leg up there. It's not an open and shut right now, but it'll be concluded based on the numbers. But I think I made a really good case for Matthews. I do agree with you. In my heart of hearts, though, MacKinnon is the guy who might be a sentimental favorite just because he's never won it before and he's been around it, sniffing around for years, as you suggested. And maybe it's just going to be one of those situations. Well, it's time to give this guy his due. But I really believe in my presentation that the numbers speak to Austin Matthews in a bigger way than I anticipated when I undertook that exercise. So it remains to be seen how it's going to be concluded. We'd love to hear from our listeners who you think is going to be the winner of the Hart Trophy and the Vezina Trophy. You made a compelling case there, AJ. I too thought it was an open and shut case for Hellebuyck, but you've made a great case that it shouldn't be necessarily so. And maybe we'll news on that a little bit more, but for now, we'll take a break. And we'll come back with a DFS strategy based on tonight's 8-game schedule. You're listening to RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ. We'll be back right after these messages.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
All right, we're back on the podcast with Statsman and AJ, and it's time to turn our attention to the 8-game schedule on tonight's radar. AJ, some compelling matchups that we have touched on already, but it's time to get into the DFS portion of our show, and let me know how you laid out your roster on DraftKings ahead of tonight's contest.
Well, the first thing I wanted to do is to make sure I avoided matchups where there's not much going on there in terms of, you know, you've got the Rangers playing Ottawa. Normally, you know, Rangers are at home. You'd think about stacking them. That game means nothing for the Rangers. They don't need it. So I avoided them. And so there's a couple of other games, Tampa and Buffalo. Again, you'd probably consider stacking Tampa most often, but they can't really move anywhere in the playoffs. We could find out in a couple hours here that they're going to rest guys. So I avoided that one as well. So to build my lineup, I started with a mini Vegas stack here. It's a big game for the Golden Knights if they want to try and move up into the three spot there and try and track down the Kings. And I went with the combination Tomas Hertl at center, 4,700. He's got 3 points since being back, looking pretty good. And I paired him up with Dorofeev, I believe I said that right.
Yep, you did.
Who's only 3,700. And he's on a bit of a tear right now. So a pretty cheap price for him. He's got, you know, 3 points in his last two games. So it's not a sustained production, but at least two shots per game over his last five, 4 points total. I think he's pairing up really well with Hertl. So I'm going to use those two guys together. Their cost is very minimal. My other center, as much as I didn't want to do this, I went with Dylan Larkin tonight, 7K. They are on the road against Montreal, but Larkin is likely going to come into this game just red hot, trying to do everything he can to make the postseason here. He's got 6 points in his last three games. He's looked really good, a ton of shots. He's got three or more shots on goal in seven straight contests. So it was hard not to use Larkin, even though personally, I hope he's nothing. I want him to just zeros across the board. For my other wingers, I went with Kyle Connor for Winnipeg. They do have a reason to play tonight. And they're at home against Seattle. That's a pretty decent matchup. He's 7,200. I thought about using him with Shifley. I moved away from that. But Kyle Connor, he's got points in seven straight games, just really playing a high level of hockey right now, worth the $7,200 price tag. And then Andre Kuzmenko for Calgary is another player, just $4,400 DraftKings. And he's got, over his last nine games, he's got seven multi-point efforts. So why he's coming in at $4,400 on DraftKings doesn't make a lot of sense to me right now. He's looked really, really good. And it's not like they've all been assists and there's no goals. He's got nine goals in his last nine games, added seven helpers over that. Of those 16 points, nine coming with the man advantage. So Kuzmenko, I think, way underpriced on DraftKings. And look at that. I reminded myself here with my utility spot, I did use Shifley tonight. He's 5,400. So I've got the stack of Shifley with Kyle Connor. Shifley has been a little less productive, but still producing three goals, three assists in his last seven games. His most recent one, that Colorado game, despite them putting seven, he didn't have any points in that one. So that was a bit of a concern, but I'll use him. Defensively, I went back to Detroit. $3,700 for Shane Gostisbehere. He's been playing on that top power play unit. He's got four assists in his last two games. I think, again, if they get power play opportunities, it's been Gostisbehere, not Moritz Seider, who's been on the top group there. So I'd expect big minutes from him, possibly picking up some more assists. Similarly, Boston has a game to play for against tonight. $5,500 for Charlie McAvoy, another player who's been getting the top power play assignments of late. There is a chance that Kevin Shattenkirk could move into that spot, but I think McAvoy will get the bulk of the minutes. And then between nets, I went with the seemingly presumptive Vezina Trophy winner, Connor Hellebuyck. I ran through all of his numbers. They're at home against Seattle. It's a great matchup. I think it's a good opportunity to use them. And you can't use Bobrovsky tonight. They're going with Anthony Stolarz down in Florida. So that factored into that decision as well. I think if Bobrovsky was in, I would have thought about it. But I would use Hellebuyck over Stolarz for sure.
How much is Hellebuyck on DraftKings?
Apologies. Hellebuyck comes in at $8,200.
$8,200. Okay. That's in the range that I was looking at for my goalie. I didn't pick Hellebuyck, though. I'll leave that for a surprise in a minute. But I got to tell you, AJ, we agree on more players on this show than we have all season long. And that's not a big number. I think that's three players, I think, that I have in common with you. But we'll go through them, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. But I started off, like you, at center with Dylan Larkin being a factor in my lineup. And I told you off the air before we went to start this show today, this guy, I've been watching a lot of Detroit's hockey lately, and he's been playing like a man possessed. We've talked a lot down the stretch about how Sidney Crosby trying to will his team into the postseason. Dylan Larkin's doing exactly the same thing as the captain and leader of this squad, but not to nearly as much fanfare, even though he's got 14 points in his last 12 games played and just playing, laying his guts on the ice every night, very few people that I've ever seen, quite frankly, in recent years. So I gave him the nod against Montreal, a team that is not playing for anything, trying to defend home ice. They haven't done a very good job of it all year long. And that may explain why Larkin's price tag is a hefty $8,400. I don't normally like to go spend that much, but I just think this is too easy a matchup for him not to take advantage of it. So I expect a big point night for him. Then I pair him at center with Thomas Hertl from Vegas. He comes in at $6,200. He has a pretty soft matchup when you consider the opponent is the visitors from Chicago, a team that has very little to play for. And the fact that this is a home game for Vegas might be an advantage for Hertl. On top of that, four goals and three assists in his last eight games played. So he comes in on a hot streak and looking to get his footing ahead of the playoffs and really be a factor for this team as they enter the postseason, with him healthy and in tow. On the wings, I went with David Perron of Detroit, looking at that team and thinking, I don't think they're going to take a misstep tonight, AJ, against the Canadiens in a game they have to get. They beat them in overtime at home. I think they're going to be more decisive here tonight. Perron will be a factor with $5,000 being the price tag, 10 points in his last eight games played, another veteran who's leading the pack in Detroit, and they're getting great leadership from some of their veteran players. So Perron and Larkin leading that parade tonight. In the other win position, I went with Jake DeBrusk, $5,300, his price tag, pretty modest against Ottawa, a team that is and also ran and will be vying for the first overall draft pick when all is said and done at the end of the season. He comes in as first line winger on this club. So that means he's going to get a lot of reps in a good in good situations, as well as getting some power play time. And I just think he plays a typical Boston grinding style, power forward, and will be heard from in a game that the Bruins need to get. So they'll lean on their big boys. And I consider Jake DeBrusk a budding one of those big boys for the Bruins. Yeah, and on defense, I agreed with you in terms of Shane Gostisbehere. He's been playing lights out for this club for weeks, and he has taken over the first power play, running it from that quarterback position at the point. 7 assists in his last 8 games played. $5,300 the price tag there. What was his price tag for you on DraftKings, AJ, if you can recall?
Gostisbehere was $3,700.
Wow, that's a big discrepancy, isn't it? $1,600 in your favor. The surprise component of my team, I'll say, is Tony DeAngelo, AJ, a guy who has not lived up to the billing overall in Carolina, and he has been injury prone in his time there, but he's healthy now, and I think he's got to show well in the late stages of the season to cement his role on this very deep defense. Price tag is only $3,500 for a visit to Columbus. It's his third game back after injury, and I expect that they're going to use him a lot and rest some of their regulars, so he'll get some run on the power play time as well. So I think that is conducive to a good night for a guy at that low price tag. Then I found that I had some extra money, so I went back to the well up front, and I found a couple of players I think are in good situations. I'll go back to that Columbus game for another piece of the Carolina offense. Martin Netzkatch has been slumping a little bit offensively of late, but they got to get him going. Another guy that they count on in the top 6 for regular offense. It's been wanting for a while. I think he's going to get a lot of ice tonight. Priced at $6,600. I'm looking for a breakout game from him to, again, solidify his role in advance of the postseason. And finally, the offense is rounded up by Charlie Coyle of the Boston Bruins, a top 6 forward who has excelled all season long and has really been central to the reason why they have been as competitive as they are, assuming a top 6 role after being a bottom 6 forward the last couple of years in Boston. And he's done it with great offensive totals and a solid defense and big physical presence. Look, the Bruins are not going to stumble against Ottawa, and I think I picked two guys that are going to make sure that doesn't happen in DeBrusk and Coyle, so I like those two picks in that game. And then finally, I'm looking for a goalie win, and who better than the second winningest goalie of all time when you consider regulation and overtime in the history of hockey? That's Freddie Anderson, AJ. It might surprise you to know that. $8,500, the price tag there. And even if he doesn't go in net, I don't care who was in net for Carolina. I'm picking the Carolina goalie. So that may be in doubt at this point in time, but I'm going with Freddie right now and lock that in. So that leaves us to our final thoughts, AJ. And there is some doubt about when our next show is going to be. I think we have to do our due diligence and get ready for the playoff show that we do, the start, the playoff rounds every year. We're going to go through 8 rounds. Eight series, in the first round. And as I said, the most exciting first round of any playoff format. We want to give it the proper attention that it deserves. So it'll have its own show later this week, possibly Thursday or Friday. So keep an eye on our Twitter feeds to find that out for sure. But AJ, we're at the point now where things get really exciting and the chips are on the table. So I'm really looking forward to it. I know you are too.
Yeah, I'll mention one other thing. The axe is already starting to fall in the coaching carousel as Don Granato got the pink slip, the walking papers, whatever you want to call them, this morning for Buffalo. Feels a little premature to me, but they'll move on and find somebody else. I would be shocked if Granato doesn't land somewhere. Maybe back on the bench as an assistant, but I think he'll find a head coaching job before next season.
Yeah, I like his chances too, AJ. He has a pretty good resume, and I mean, tough situation in Buffalo where so many of their forwards really regressed from outstanding years last year. I don't think you can pin it all on him. It's just that they had such a great year, and expectations were high, and they certainly weren't met by the Sabres club this season. And of course, somebody has to pay for that. But we are looking ahead now. And once the playoffs races are solved, we're going to be back in front of you with our look at the first round of the playoffs And keep an eye on our Twitter feeds, is what I'll say. We'll thank you again for listening to RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ. As always, we remind you that we're here to help you with all things relating to your enjoyment of fantasy hockey. So we encourage you to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Give us the answers to the question about who's the Hart Trophy winner and who's the Vezina Trophy winner this week, if you can. And we'll share the prevailing views if we get a good number of responses. You can follow us, reminder here, follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22, and you can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. We'll be back at you in front of you in a couple of days. Stick with it, and keep an eye on our Twitter feeds. So long, everybody.